I had
people
messaging
me like, I heard a GPSA meeting was very intense.
I honestly don't think it was intense.
It could have been a lot more intense,
but I think I focused it. Really brought it together.
I thought I brought the room together.
I'm usually the favorite part of the most assembly meetings.
Okay, that's a little cocky there.
I think I truly am.
My favorite game is Small Talk. There was an issue about arranging processes and procedures. I like them.
And we are moving forward.
I was really. You understand.
It's what is that?
International culture fest, not internet.
It's just culture fest.
I'll just talk to him.
I don't control the thing, you guys.
I have to set up the machines that the record.
Where is?
You don't think we should have one?
No, you should.
I'm going to try and explain.
Yeah, I lied.
They have animals they want to know. I'll be the last one standing.
My trash heap. It's my trash heap, but you can't tell me otherwise.
King of Trash Mountain.
How's it going?
Good.
Good to see you.
I mean, think about how this played out. I wonder why.
I usually don't say parentheses because he's usually late.
Whoa!
I'm not late. I'm on time.
You late last time.
I like to.
I know that. Bad.
Yeah, I think I can do it. Because I'm going to stay in my fifth year here as well. So can I make a transition?
No, you have to be exclusively a matriculate. You can't be both like undergrad and undergrad. Yeah.
But I'm not. I'll be a master student in my fifth year.
I was going to say, if you're elected, we've never elected presidents, but they've always been a member of the GPSA. That's never happened before.
What do you mean? I feel like I could do it.
No, you could not.
This looks really easy to do.
Yeah.
No,
I sit around every day doing that thing, right?
Rena makes it look easy. Rena makes it look easy.
She does. She does make it look easy.
She's like, I'll just yell at you. My gavel.
Chairing is like really just one thing. The job.
Chairing is easy part. Chairing is the easy part.
Going up and chairing is fun.
The administrative is annoying.
I don't even know what's happening right now.
It would be like, I would win.
Catherine would not beat me. Catherine's not even here.
No, they don't. They say under, there's unenumerated powers. One of them.
Yeah.
Where's the president of my side?
The only one is.
I just messed up.
I know. I'm not responsible for him. I'm not his keeper. That's Gabe.
What? I always know where he is and she knows where I am.
Hi, Gina. Can she or see me? Oh, yes, she could see us.
All right, I don't need to get that. All right, we have quorum, so let's get started. Terrell, could you call the roll?
Sure. Anderson?
Here.
Pataglia? Bensel?
Here.
Prattman? Giroux?
Yep.
Fitch? Guido?
Here.
Hatch? Howard?
Here. Hatch is here too.
Hatch!
Thank you.
Right. Sorry.
Hoffman?
Here.
Kim? Cruiser?
Here.
Lowe?
Here.
Michael?
Here.
Quinn? Shot?
Here.
Stanlone? Wiggers?
Here.
Winarto?
Here.
And that's all.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. I think we have 14 members present. Okay, so we'll move into a call for late additions to the agenda. Are there any late additions to the agenda? No? Okay, then with that, I'm actually going to ask that someone make a motion to amend the agenda so that we can actually move the executive vice chair election up to in front of the approval of the meeting minutes.
So motion to do that.
Okay. Does no one, to be clear, does anybody object to that? No? Okay, then we'll have the election now. So if we're doing that, it has to take place in an executive session. So anyone who's not a voting member of the assembly, if you could step outside, that would be great. Thank you very much. And then I will figure this out.
Gina, can you just mute yourself for a minute while we do exec session? We'll wave at you when we're ready.
Close your eyes.
wait for me to like raise my hand like that.
Actually,
and then
we have to stop the recording.
Oh,
so
okay. That's
okay.
Why I do that.
Right?
Or
because
we
could
just
otherwise
stop it.
It will be in the recording.
Hey, Craig.
Something.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Okay.
So
what are you doing?
When we
we'll figure this out.
When we started back up, then
okay.
Okay.
Thank,
okay. Thank you.
That's great.
So Byzantine.
So Pam, just let me know when. Okay, great. So all right, we are back in open session, and the new executive vice chair is Elena Michael. Congratulations, Elena. Matt?
I'd just like to note for the minutes an appreciation for the former executive vice chair service and our best wishes for her moving forward.
Okay, yeah, let the minutes reflect that. I don't think it's, you know, yeah, let's make sure that the minutes reflect that, and I'll make sure Anna receives that. Great. Okay.
Well, we could say it's a assembly-wide
yes.
Sentiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think we're all in favor of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
and
then,
that it's assembly.
Does everybody agree
like,
in that
same
thing?
No.
We're all together on that. Not you, Kevin. We just go on. Everyone but Kevin.
Everyone but Kevin.
and that's
great. Okay, so with that, we'll move into the approval of the meeting minutes. You can. Sorry, those aren't in the packet.
Motion to table the meeting minutes.
Yeah, motion to table the meeting minutes. We'll get those for the next meeting. Okay. So with that, we will move into business of the day, starting with UA Resolution 5. Matt, you have the floor.
Thank you. Here. UA Resolution 5 is a bit of a blast from the past. It's for October. It was brought to us Saturday during for a while because we were very busy with important matters, and it is now back. It was committed back to the CJC at the December 5th meeting, and it's now come back. Now, the CJC considered it for a number of meetings, did not make any changes to it. But I'm happy to run you through it briefly. In essence, it's a small update to the list of charters under the CJC. In essence, what it's attempting to do is these are areas the CJC in the past has always or has looked at in the past. And part of our problem or our problem in the assemblies is institutional knowledge is very much orally transmitted, not necessarily written down. So for instance, the first item on here is the UA is CDC would look at anything under 6.4 as pursuant to policy 4.1. That's a very technical definition that was given to us when we ceded authority on out of the code to 6.4. And it's important to note that for the future because that policy 4.1 outlines the number of policies and procedures and protections that have to be followed. So just simply noting that. Also noting, for instance, the fire safety and display guidelines, which actually when I was chair of the assembly 2 years ago, I first found out about when I heard from a reporter who was asking for the UA's comment on it. And then finally, looking at the proposed code amendments that were passed and still being considered, it would add in anything over non-matriculated minors who would be excluded from the code, saying the CDC would have the authority to look into that. So in essence, it's really just adding these three areas to the CDC's charge. Not so much because we don't do it, but also just to note so that in 2 years, 3 years, when I am gone and when I imagine many of you would no longer be on the assembly, to ensure that we don't end up forgetting our own charge, forgetting our own authority, and therefore being derelict in our very important duties. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. If you have a question or comment, raise your hand and I'll put you on the speaker's list.
I move we accept this resolution.
Oh, Jeremy, I think Jeremy had something you want.
Just real quick, just thinking about the wording here real quick, and it may or may not be important, but the way that it's worded, therefore resolved, the committee will review any proposed motion related to. Is that an intentional will, or is what we're looking for is we'll have the rights or the ability to review rather than we are going to actually review every change proposed to these?
The way that language is already in the chart, already in our bylaws, it appears for every committee, and on their delegation, it's in the past and it's seen as the committee will is and they must. So anything, for instance, as it stands right now, anything where any code amendments must go through the CJC because they will be reviewed there first before moving up. So in this case, if we were to have it pass a motion looking at 6.4, it would have to go through the CJC. In this case, is corollary is the same way we do with handle a code amendment.
So my concern there is not actually on the first two bullet points, but on the last one, written behavioral policy regarding non-matriculated minors who are outside the full code of conduct. That would mean then every change to behavioral policies regarding non-matriculated minors outside of the code of conduct are then have to be reviewed by the Codes and Judicial Committee?
No, and that's actually an excellent point. The way our bylaws are written is if the UA were to pass a resolution considering that, then it must go through the CJC.
Got it. Okay, that's right. We talked about that too, and I forgot. Thank you.
Not a problem.
Okay. That was a really good question.
Absolutely.
Does anyone else have any comments or questions on this resolution?
Just to note, it's a bylaw change that would require a majority of seated membership to pass. It couldn't be voted on the same meeting as introduced, but because it was introduced in October, it's been introduced for quite a while. So we are eligible to vote on it today, or we can table it and vote on it next meeting if the desire to do so.
Yeah, that's right. So no one wants to speak on the resolution, otherwise we'll go directly into voting. Okay, then we will go directly into voting. It's a bylaw amendment, so it requires a two-thirds vote of the assembly.
Majority of seated members. Charter is two-thirds of the assembly.
Are you sure?
That doesn't surprise me.
Wow. Okay. Then we'll just do. Okay. Then if you then that's 11. We need 11 votes to pass. So if you're in favor of this resolution, bylaw amendment, please raise your hand. You are opposed to this resolution. Please raise your hand with placard. And if you'd like to abstain, please raise your hand or placard. By a vote of 14-0-1, UAR5 passes. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so we will now move on to UA Resolution 11, accepting President's proposal of a one-year term extension for the Judicial Administrator. I think this is probably the most contentious thing that we're doing. So Just to clarify, this resolution is basically, yeah, and if you want to speak, raise, get on the speakers list. This resolution basically was the sort of a kind of an ongoing discussion between the executive committee and the president on the, I mean, the executive committee on behalf of the assembly. That to talk about how we can, using the best possible procedures, extend the term of the judicial administrator and or reappoint her. So that's what's going on here. And if you have any questions, get your hand on, raise your hand and you'll be put on the speakers list. I saw Rena first, then Richard, then Jared. Rena, Richard, Matt, Jared.
Your far sight isn't very good.
All right. Richard, wait, no, Rena was first, then Marty, then Richard. How did everyone else see this, but not me?
Yeah, Richard, Marty.
Okay, Rena, Richard, Marty, Matt, Jeremy. Okay, good.
Can I speak now?
Yes.
Okay, so I would like to add a be it resolved clause that I have sent to the email of the Office of the Assembly and Gapes, but I can also read it. Should I do that?
Yes.
Okay, so I would like to add at the end, be it finally resolved that a new or revised JA appointment or reappointment shall be finalized and agreed upon by all stakeholders by the last meeting of the Assembly in May 2018, and in the case that this is not achieved, the Assembly intends to follow the procedure currently laid out in the code.
Okay, is there a second on that?
Second.
Okay, so the motion to amendment has been, the motion to amend has been seconded. With the discussion, Jeremy.
I think the idea of setting a timeline is great. The two issues I have right off the bat is, first, at that point, there would be no way to follow the documented procedure in the code because we're already past the time frame specified in the code. So I'm concerned about that. I think that the intent should be to follow the procedure that has been used, not the what's written in the code, because those are two different things. I'm not sure how that'll work, but if we're going to set a kind of else case, if this doesn't happen, then this, that the else should be, if this doesn't happen, then we'll follow the procedure that's been followed for the past how many ever years, or our intent is to follow the procedure that's been followed for the past how many ever years. But I think the idea of writing into the document that we're going to work together on it and come to an agreement, which I think is implicit in here, but making it explicit, I think, is important. So.
I'm sorry. I don't understand. Could you speak? Read that again. I don't know what it is.
Sure. Should I read everything again?
Read the rest.
Slowly, Rita.
Okay. Be it finally resolved.
Yeah.
That a new or revised JA appointment or reappointment shall be finalized and agreed upon by all stakeholders by the last meeting of the Assembly in May 2018, and in the case that this is not achieved, the Assembly intends to follow the procedure currently laid out in the code.
Okay,
so the next, Matt, then Ellis.
Thank you.
And so, then I'd like to be on that too.
Matt, Marty, Ellis, sorry.
Anyways, in terms of, I guess, just to part one of Jeremy's points, conceivably, I mean, we could follow the code, the current procedure says, in October of the year preceding the expiration of the term of the judicial administrator, if we're extending the term a year, this coming October, we, in essence, of the code, you could follow the procedure as laid out again.
So it's hybrid of the two.
Yes.
Which is not a terrible thing.
Exactly. And I think, and I the CJC discussed it when we get out of discussion as amendment, actually have a report from the CJC on this resolution specifically. But when we discussed at the CJC, there was some concern of, okay, we have this procedure. If there, I mean, in essence, the code is the equivalent of a double veto. Both parties must agree to change it. And considering that there are certain things the president may say, I want this, and the UA, there's some things that I'd imagine this, the committee, the CJC and this assembly won't want to give. If we reach an impasse, I think it's good to say, I mean, you can tweak language, you can soften language if you'd like, but to say, okay, we're going to do this, but if we don't come to an agreement, which is okay, then we need to have some way we're going to do. I feel like part of the idea is we're going to provide certainty to the JA, at least to say we're going to create a new process, but if for some reason it didn't happen, by October, we're going to follow, at least within the code, and then we're going to follow our rules.
So I think just adding in October of the next year at the end of that, just to clarify that if we don't receive it by the end of the thing, there is going to be the year extension, and in that October we'll be following the standard procedure. That makes sense to me.
Okay. I think you could consider proposing that as an amendment to the amendment. So
we'll
have a chance to talk. Next is Marty.
Yeah. So the current procedure is to set up a committee, right? Which then renominates, right? And so what you're saying is that committee could be set up in May because the process didn't work out. Is that right? And that, or no, the committee would be set up in the fall.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and then that would involve, I'm just trying to think it through. I don't have any objections yet to it personally, but that would involve then making sure that the committee finished its deliberations soon enough that it could decide if it needs to reappoint or it needs to make a search for a new person before June. Isn't that right? Because June is the final period. Am I right, or maybe I'm getting the numbers wrong? June is what we're not going against the 1 year, the appointment till June 2019. We're saying that if an agreement isn't agreed to by May of this year, we will set up a committee probably in the fall, which will then consider, it'll just reappoint.
Exactly.
And there may be a process whereby the thought about revising the appointment, getting the committees that were set up earlier to deal with it, to rethink the whole process, but that won't be in effect for the reappointment time. We don't have a particular period of time, a 2 year period. It would be that would apply to, or a 1 year period. The new committee, we get going in June.
You know, the procedure laid out in the code would be
2 years.
Every other year in the October preceding the expiration of the JA's term, a committee will be convened to recommend two candidates to the president.
Right.
The president will then pick one of those candidates for the UA to then confirm.
Reappoint. There's not a reappoint.
There is not currently.
There is no reappointment procedure, so we would just have to use that procedure to keep appointing the JA over and over again.
Two candidates, and the JA who's currently serving may not get it.
Could.
Oh, okay.
This is why we want to change the procedure.
I see. Okay.
But if the president won't.
But we have some time to work with.
Right.
And actually, I just side note on that, I think meeting with the president's office as the exec committee was hugely beneficial to our understanding of what's going on. And I really don't think that this is an adversarial relationship at this point.
Right.
I think we're pretty much on the same page. So I think we can come to something.
So this may not happen at all.
I think we can come, as a group, we can come to an agreement.
This is a feat of the fire. But, thank you.
Yeah. Next is Ellis.
Sorry, I'm having a senior moment. Let me get this. This is the permanent change. This is a request for a 1 year extension. Presumably, the current JA has agreed to the extension. So what is the big issue here?
We don't know if she has
her. She's aware of it.
We know she's aware of it, but
whether she agrees.
But she hasn't said, oh yeah, I'll do another year, and then we just bump the process.
I mean, I would presume she probably would prefer 2 years, but yeah.
So what we're really doing is they're covering ourselves in case she decides she does not want to do this.
No, I don't see that.
When doesn't this become moot?
I'm pretty sure that she intends to she intends to serve as the JA.
Okay, then I'm still Since this isn't a permanent change to anything, simply a request to put off for a year what might be a normal procedure if the JA's term had run out. I'm sorry, I'm dense here. Why would you do this? What's the big deal, right? I mean, why go through all these ruminations about, you know, what ifs? If the JA wants another year and is agreed upon, then we say yes or no. If she'd been doing, the only reason that I would say no is if he hasn't been doing a good job and this is a chance to dump her, which I don't think is the case. So I'm sorry, since it doesn't involve a change in bylaws or change in anything, just say, sure, you know, if it works out, fine. If not, then we'll deal with it instead of trying to anticipate what could conceivably happen in terms of our normal process. Maybe I'm reading this wrong, right? But, you know, it seems just the kind of thing that's handled by the executive committee in a handshake.
Yeah.
This doesn't require, you know, hours of formal discussion about what conceivably could happen. Am I being dense here?
No, I agree. I think handling things informally is usually a better procedure. But Matt has a burning question, I think.
Not at all. And it's not necessarily the matter, but, and I'd be happy to, in essence, the code as currently written says you can only get a 2-year term. It doesn't allow 1-year terms. In prior sessions and prior things, in prior communications, the president has encouraged us very strongly to follow our rules pretty much to the letter, to be as formal as possible. They're asking us to bend the rules, give a 1-year extension. The president has expressed my understanding is that she's expressed her concerns about the current reappointment process, because the current reappointment process, there isn't one. You redo a search every 2 years, which I personally, and I'll report the CDC's actually formal opinion when we get back out of the amendment. In essence, the process has to happen every 2 years. It's not really practical. It's a holdover from when the JA was used to be generally an internal hire, so it's easy to search 2 years. Now it's a national search. In essence, there's an incongruency there. And the president, my understanding, has also said she doesn't want us to change the process while we still have a JA reappointment pending, because the term ends in June. So the idea is we discuss how we want to change it. We give Michelle 1 more year, and then next year, whatever the new process is, we follow it. My understanding is this amendment is in essence saying, if for some reason we don't get this done in October, we're going to follow it the way the code says. We're going to convene the search. We're going to go through it. And it may not renominate Michelle. It may not. But in essence, it's just saying, in the case nothing happens, here's what's going to happen, so everyone knows where the UA is going and how we're going
to
react.
Would we have time to? When would her term end?
So her term ends in June 22nd this year. If we extend for 1 year, it'd be June 22nd of 2019. The code says we convene that committee in October. So hopefully by the end of 2018, we'd know, and she'd have either 3 or 4 months either to be reconfirmed, or if, and I don't know how likely it wouldn't be, if, for instance, she wasn't reappointed, she'd have 3 or 4 months to find a new position if she so desired.
But then we would have to have a search, which means that for what could conceivably be a year, no. we would have no JA.
The search would be held in October.
Yeah. Before, you said that her appointment was up this coming June.
June 2019.
So, 2000, I'm sorry.
Yes,
right,
yes,
it's right here. In the
Okay.
So her term is up in June 2000 this year.
Each year.
This resolution is extending it till
2019. No, that's what I meant. Mm-hmm. But I thought these contingencies.
Oh, no. My understanding of the contingency is that, and Rena, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that if this body and the president's office don't agree on how to change the process, then we're going to fall back on the current one.
So that's separate from, in a way, separate from
the extension.
Extension.
Yes,
correct.
It is.
Now
yeah.
I understand.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't worry. It happens to everybody. Jeremy.
So I would now like to just amend at the end of that for clarity's sake, beginning October 2018. So it would read, and the reappointment process, in the case this is not achieved, the UA intends to follow the procedure in the code beginning October 2018.
One October. First of October.
Sure.
Because there's lots goes on. You need two months at least.
Beginning of October 2018.
First of October.
Sure. October 1, 2018.
Beginning October 1,
2018.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So wait, was that a formal amendment?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Amendment to the amendment.
So an amendment to the amendment. Let me pull it up again because I just got it. Okay. So you're motioning to amend
the end of the proposed amendment to read beginning October 1st, 2018. Just for clarity's sake.
Would it be possible to read the entirety of the amendment?
First,
I figure he's going to 2 months.
2018.
Okay, so we have, so we're motioning to amend the resolution such that it will read to the end of the, at the end of the resolution, be it finally resolved that a new or revised JA appointment slash reappointment shall be finalized and agreed upon by all stakeholders by the last meeting of the Assembly in May 2018. And in the case that this is not achieved, the Assembly intends to follow the procedure currently laid out in the code beginning October 1st, 2018. That's the amendment. We will now move into discussion on the amendment to the amendment. Matt.
Do we need beginning? Because that's insane. Right, to me, it's just, we're just going to follow it on this date.
No.
I don't think we need beginning.
Okay.
Sure.
Just does anyone disagree with taking beginning out so that it will just say laid out in the code in October 1st, on October 1st, 2018? So to change beginning to on. No? Does anyone? And that's what we'll do. Okay.
I'm going to call the question on the amendment to the amendment.
There's been a motion to call the question on the amendment. Is there any?
No, this is the amendment to the amendment.
On the amendment to the amendment?
Yeah.
Is there any dissent to voting on adding on October 1st, 2018? Okay, seeing no dissent, we can vote on it. Is there any dissent? Is there any dissent to adding that to the amendment? This is to the adding it to the amendment. Okay, seeing no dissent, this has been added to the amendment. We will now go back into discussion on the amendment, which now includes on October 1st, 2018 at the end.
Question? Second?
There has been a motion to call the question on the full amendment. There's been a second. Is there any dissent to calling the question on the amendment? Seeing no dissent, we can vote on the amendment. If you are in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand or placard. You are opposed, and if you'd like to abstain, by a vote of 14-0-1, the amendment passes. So we will now move back into discussion on the resolution as a whole.
Question.
There's been a motion to call the question. Okay, before we do that, there was actually something that I thought that we should at least talk about. So, and that was, when we say stakeholders, I think maybe we want to, like, what is a stakeholder?
That's a terrible point. Yeah.
Is it the UA? Is it the SA? Is it, you know, the GPSA?
Right. Agreed upon.
Yeah.
I would replace stakeholders maybe with just agreed upon between the Office of the President and the UA or something to that effect.
Okay. So I guess this was my concern. So, yeah. So could we make an amendment to change the word stakeholders to say, or instead of saying all stakeholders, so that it says the university the president of the university and the university assembly.
Agreed upon by the president of the university and the university assembly.
Second. Second.
Okay. Is there any dissent to adding that? Seeing no dissent, okay. Stakeholders has been changed to by the university president and the university assembly. Okay. Was there a motion to call the question?
Question.
Second.
Okay.
Dissent.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. There's dissent. Do you retract your dissent?
Motion.
Or
I didn't dissent. I called the question.
Right. I'm sorry. Right. Do you retract dissent. Your motion to call the question? Other people want to continue talking.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. Richard.
I was going to say, which is at the Kemp's Code Committee, we did suggest an amendment. So that's what you were going to do.
Yes, it is.
Then do it.
Okay, so we're still in discussion on the general resolution. Did you have an amendment?
I have a report from the CJC on this whole resolution, so it would take a minute. So where am I in speaker to the question?
This was on the technically, you are two down. We still have Richard and Marty.
Well, Richard just went.
Richard, yeah, technically, I get it. Yeah,
I mean,
so, Marty, you have the floor.
And then I'll provide.
And then Matt,
support.
You have the
floor. No, if I can be after you, that's great.
Okay.
Matt, okay. You have the floor.
So, thank you. The CJC met last Wednesday. This is we discussed this resolution in partially in open session, partially in executive session. There were three things that came out of that discussion. One, the CJC by a formal vote recommended or were discussed and recommended a change on line 21. Instead of saying be it therefore resolved, the University Assembly concurs with the president's proposal. The CJC had amended, had internally suggested the amendment. The University Assembly proposes to extend the current digital administrator term under the rationale in that we are also doing this. It's a joint effort. We're in essence jointly bending the rules, and it's not just the president doing so. That was brought by the full CJC. Second, the CJC expressed a concern over line 15, specifically the portion that says that is more in line with HR practices and peer institutions, noting that our peer institutions don't allow their communities to have such a large role in the JA process, meaning to conform with peer institutions is to remove the community input. And HR practices also generally don't have community input in them as much. So there's concern in that. The president could certainly think that, but having that in our resolution would be concerning. And then finally,
what line was that?
15. So the middle portion.
Are you suggesting deleting that whole clause?
No, just that is more important. That whole.
With HR practices?
Yes.
So you're making a motion to amend?
No, I'm providing information, and then I will make it.
Okay, great.
So you're saying that is more in line with HR practices, a semicolon?
So that between the two semicolons on line 15, the CJC expressed concern about. And then finally, the CJC at the end of the meeting, by a formal vote, said they support and would have approved the resolution had it been on our floor. It wasn't. But the CJC in general is supportive, but we did highlight those two changes. So in that case, as chair of the CJC, I'm bringing them to the assembly, and I can do them together or in sequence, but I would so move.
Seriatim. One after the other.
That's what I was thinking. So in that case, the first motion conveyed from the CJC is to amend line 21. So instead of saying, being it therefore resolved, the University Assembly concurs with the president's proposal to, it would say, be it therefore resolved, the University Assembly proposes to extend the current judicial administrator's term until June
22nd, 2019.
Second. Wait. It's a motion to amend that line.
Isn't it already in there?
Yeah.
It's removing concurs with the president's proposal and replacing it with proposes.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay, so there has been an amendment, there has been a motion to amend the resolution on line 21 to remove concurs with the president's proposal, to change that to proposes. I wrote propes, but that's
proposes
because I. Proposes to, so we would say, proposes to extend the judicial administrator's term until June 22nd, 2019.
The current judicial administrator's term.
Yes. The current judicial administrator's term until June 22nd, 2019.
Okay.
So we'll move into discussion on the amendment.
Question.
Second.
Okay. Is there any dissent to voting on this amendment? Seeing no dissent. Okay. Is there any dissent to this amendment? Okay. If there's no dissent to the amendment, then it's been amended. So now it reads, the University Assembly proposes to extend the current judicial administrator's term until June 22nd, 2019. Did you have another amendment?
Yes, the other amendment was motion to amend line 15 to strike. That is more in line with HR practices and peer institutions.
Second.
Okay, what are we going to do about the semicolons?
Get rid of one of the semicolons.
Get rid of one semicolon.
Okay. which one?
It doesn't particularly matter.
Okay.
We're handling the clerical matter.
The silver one, not the gold one.
Yeah. So, okay. Okay, well, like we'll one. Yeah, we won't waste any time. I was going to have you guys vote on which semicolon. So there's been a motion to amend the resolution to remove that is more in line with HR practices and peer institutions semicolon from line 15. So that's the amendment. We'll now move into discussion.
Question.
Second.
Okay, we're moving quickly. That's fine. Like everyone's life easier. But I just want to make sure, if you object to that, please speak up. I think it's important that dissenting opinions are always heard. No? Okay. Does anyone object to the amendment in general? Okay, then by unanimous consent, that is more in line with HR practices and peer institutions has been removed from line 15.
Together with one semicolon.
With the second semicolon.
Specifically.
I will know if that's the other. Okay, so we'll now move back into discussion on the general amendment. I'm sorry, on the general resolution.
Like to call the question?
Sorry, there's been a motion to call the question. There has been a second. Is there any dissent to voting on this resolution now? Because once we vote on this resolution, it will get sent to the president. No? Okay. Therefore, if there's no dissent to voting, we will vote. If you are in favor of this resolution, please raise your hand. If you're opposed to this resolution, please raise your hand or placard. And if you'd like to abstain, I abstain. By a vote of 14-0-1, the UA Resolution 11 passes, and this will get conveyed to the president accordingly so that we can begin to discuss the next steps as soon as possible. Thanks, everyone, for your time. Okay, so just kind of a time check. We have guests coming at 5:30, so we have about 15 to 20 more minutes to handle UA Resolution 9 and UA Resolution 10, which is good. That means we're actually moving faster. So we'll start with UA Resolution 9. Joe, you have the floor.
Yeah, so this resolution was mostly Linda, but a combination of both of us, you know, working through the language. So essentially, it would reinstate the Budget Planning Committee, which was a committee that the assemblies had kind of a relationship with, and then kind of went down the tubes. So it's not there anymore. So it's not convened. But the goal of this is to essentially amend the bylaws, which you have the amended, like what the chunk of language would be in the appendix of it, to make the Budget Planning Committee an associated committee of the University Assembly, which would allow us to have liaisons sent to it and allow there to be a basically a working model that allows the University Assembly and other assemblies to comment on the budgetary process procedure, which right now is unequitably distributed. The Faculty Senate has a committee that deals with the budget planning around the faculty side of things, but the employees, the undergrads, and the graduate and professional students do not have that same ability. So by essentially reinstating this committee, we would allow all four major constituencies to have essentially a voice in that process. The specifics of what the committee makeup is highlighted in subsection 5.4.2, what would be if we amended the bylaws. But essentially, I think it's fairly self-explanatory. It allows, you know, the assemblies and shared governance to participate in the most important process of this university, some might say, just because the budget, there's always the phrase, put your money where your mouth is, and that's essentially what this university does a lot of the times, and many times groups aren't able to have an effective voice in that process, and this would essentially just cement it and really create that relationship.
Okay, so if you'd like to be in the speakers list, please raise your hand or placard. Matt, then Kevin, then Chris.
First off, just thank you for bringing this. I remember looking through old records, so I'm glad we're considering bringing it back. I guess I have two quick questions. One, the language for the bylaws, is this resurrecting the old language that used to be on our bylaws?
So,
or is it new?
This language actually was taken from, I think, how another associated committee works its language in our bylaws. So it's basically just mirroring that, making it specific to the Budget Planning Committee.
And the second question was, in terms of, so we're to make sure we're creating a new committee, correct? Are we taking someone else's committee and kind of matching
No, it would be creating a brand new committee.
Thank you.
I also wanted to just point out, this was kind of Linda Kottman's initiative, but she actually can't be here because she's taking care of her daughter, who's in the hospital in, I believe, in Colorado.
Yeah.
So I just want to acknowledge that this is Linda and Joe's initiative. Next is Kevin.
Just a point of information was, why did it dissolve in the first place?
I don't know that.
I can answer it, and then if you have something to add, you can add it. I from what I understand, in the early 2000s, this committee was kind of a parallel with the campus planning committee, and it stopped meeting for some reason. It used to be in the UA. It was in the UA's charter until 2010. When we kind of consolidated a bunch of committees into the CWC and this Campus Infrastructure Committee, the CJC always existed, and kind of got forgotten about as an initiative. But I actually think you bring up a really good point. I think kind of learning more historical information about it would be great. Did that answer your question?
I was just going to say, the UA in 2010, under the chair, Charlie Walcott was chair of the UA at the time, went through and they're essentially we consolidated all committees into two super committees, CIC, CWC, and then CJC is always existed, as Gabe said. But in essence, I would recommend that anyone, the UA's charter prior to 2010 had a lot more, we used to get the campus store, we used to get a lot of things that the UA decided not to, but if you're interested, I have old copies that I'd be happy to circulate. If anyone's interested in finding other things they may wish to pull out of, in essence, come back to because of the change in the campus climate or change in just the general circumstances?
Resident executive archivist. So I have Kevin, did Kevin, Chris, then Marty.
Yeah, so my first question was Kevin's, but the second question was, have you talked to anyone higher up in the administration about this and their feelings towards like reestablishing the?
I haven't talked to anyone directly, but I could only assume there's more input in a situation like this. They would appreciate it. I just think it's a formalized idea. And, you know, we kind of, on that, on who gets to sit on it, I think, you know, it's generous in what we, I think, offer, I suppose, to administration-based officials. It's very, it allows them to kind of control what they need to control. It basically puts all relevant members on it. So, you know, I think it's a perfectly fine thing to ask for. I don't know exactly what people's true sentiments are. I mean, you'll never know that, but, you know, that's just life sometimes around budgets.
Marty.
Yeah, I was on this committee for 2 years, and I was also on the UA when the reorganization occurred. The committee itself was a bigger committee than the campus planning committee. And the campus planning committee now, which is still a UA committee in existence, has huge number of people on it talking about lots of stuff. And my experience about the budget side of the planning committee is that you can plan something, but you won't get it done until the money comes in or the trustees approve it. So the budgetary side of the budget and planning committee was sort of whimsical, and I guess that's probably not the right word, but it was just, gee, it would be great if we did this and please give us the money for it. And as opposed to, this is the way we should spend all the money that comes into the university, you know, which is generally what a budget committee might be thinking it's doing. And so, the reason it was removed from the campus planning committee, from the UA's sort of thoughts is that let's get real. You know, we can get into the planning committee and have something to do with it. In fact, I really recommend that there's a number of undergraduates on the planning committee that there be more energies devoted to doing the planning. But getting our nose under the tent, peg for the budget is, maybe this is a good way to start. That is saying we really want to do it. And so that would be a budget committee, a budget planning committee we want to propose to the administration. I'd really suggest that there be some language in here that it not be, gee, it would be really great if we had a budget committee. Maybe it is there. But that there are certain members of the UA that take the initiative to actually lobby for it and go somewhere and talk to the head of the budget office, to talk to the head of the planning office. And talk to Leslie Schill, talk to, you know, the other people that are dealing with this in the administration and see what their take is on it. Otherwise, it can be just us spinning wheels saying we really would like to have it get done, voting for it, which is a great thing to do, but nothing will come of it. Sorry, that's just my...
Yeah, Chris, did you... I'm sorry, not Chris. Chris, I saw Chris's name. Joe, would you like to respond?
Oh, yeah. I think, obviously, that sentiment is well taken, but I think even more so, I think the reason this would present itself a different way, like, yes, it's going to look like something similar back then, but I think now there's a much different focus around the budgets. I think it's kind of inspired, like, the employee assembly after the resolution that it passed. It was originally stated in the resolution after the College Town incident that there was an increased focus on looking at, you know, funding of resource centers and how resource centers on this campus are looked at in the budget planning. I think undergraduate students and graduate and professional students have always been interested in the ideas of budget planning and what the money looks like across the university, but those groups have never been able to formally get into a room around the budgets because of situations that have occurred through informal mechanisms like last year with, you know, Mitch McBride. Because that was more of an informal committee that the provost was, you know, kind of set up around financial aid. This would allow more stable, it would allow something like that, so we're not pushing around these informal mechanisms right now. I think if we just come to the table with this uniform based idea that we're doing, it's going to allow three of the four assemblies a lot more weight in this conversation, just because there is no weight for those assemblies. And if the university assembly is the assembly to kind of help lift up the other ones, then I think that's what we should be trying to do. We've provided all the language. We've provided everything for the president and the office of the president. I say, you know what? Let's give it to them. Say, this is what we want. And then if she goes, Linda and I think would be the first two people that would happy to kind of talk and hammer out the specifics around it to create a solution like this, because I think something like this kind of needs to happen in a place that promotes quote unquote shared governance. Yeah.
Richard?
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Which is, when this, in the prior history of the 2000s, there wasn't a Cornell Tech. There is a Cornell Tech now. Mm-hmm. And much of the budgeting and much of the financials is shared now between the Ithaca campus and Cornell Tech. So the question is, would this resolution, this committee, have oversight? This is particular. Let me say why this is important, mm-hmm. or one of the reasons why it's important. In the faculty senate, there is a concern, a fairly wide concern, that the Cornell Tech is its educational programs, mm-hmm. which are supposed to be consulted with the faculty senate, are not being done. Mm-hmm. And so there's a concern about jurisdiction, especially with the one, it's now one capital,
yeah.
Cornell. It creates a space outside of the normal jurisdictions of the faculty senate, and in this case, UA. So the question is, does it cover?
I think that's an interesting question, mainly because I think that's a question that every assembly is grappling with, no matter. I think it's a question around shared governance as a whole, not just as this committee. I think it's how does the GPSA adapt to a growing graduate and professional student population over on Roosevelt Island? It's how, you know, does Cornell Tech ever start with undergrads? It's how does the SA start bridging that gap? I think it's a question that all shared governance needs to answer. Will it be addressed in this resolution? No, because I think it'd be too difficult because that would require, you know, as much as I would love to have Cornell Tech be put under this committee and have that be able to look at, I think that's a question that shared governance needs to answer first around all of the major assemblies. What is the relationship that your assembly will have with Cornell Tech first before we start molding committees around that idea? As much, you know, I would say my opinion on it, I think the assembly should start to look forward to Cornell Tech and start to try integrating it as much as possible. And I think the rest of the Cornell administration should help in coordinating that and kind of help that. But I don't necessarily know if this committee will be able to have the horsepower in order to do that.
Jeremy?
So I've come up with a few things in the course of discussion here. One is, I think it's a great idea to get some UA members with the ability to get eyes on and ears on discussion around the highest level of budget discussions and planning. So I think that's a great idea. I'm not certain that a UA committee is the best way to do it, but I think that's for you guys to figure out. That's part of this discussion. One of the things that I wonder about is there already a group on campus, administrative group, or what have you, that has these discussions, has these talks, and is there a way to liaison with that rather than worrying about forming our own committee structure, but sending formal liaisons into those groups so that we can be a part of that? The other is I don't know CPC business because I haven't been over there. Do they do budget discussion? Is that within their?
Well, they propose things to happen,
okay.
And then they search for money to have them do it.
Okay,
and
so
the
money
comes
thing.
From trustee discussions about.
But I'm sure we can find out because there has to be some group that does that high level discussion already. And is there a way for us to instead of recreating, kind of get in on that. All right, so you look like you have an answer. So I'll let you answer
kind of
that
first comment on, I think this isn't necessarily going to be a under UA. It's again associated. So other assemblies are also sending it to it. It's kind of just like, we're going to put it in IBAR laws because we have the most authority over that. And I think there is a group doing some sort of financial planning, budget planning. That's the Financial Policies Committee with the Faculty Senate. That's what my Faculty Senate representatives to the CWC suggested is the closest thing that they know of. It's the closest thing that I think I know of that I've done investigation around. And the reason why I don't believe that liaison should be sent to that is because that's wholly inclusive to the academic side. It's not to the rest of the side. So it's not very employee centric.
So my thought on that is it got to be on the administrative side, not faculty, but on the administrative side.
Okay.
Or maybe it's on the trustees end. There's got to be a committee or a board that has these planning committee discussions. So maybe it's worth doing or asking some of the VPs, what group is that? And is there any chance that we can get some eyes and ears in the room?
Yeah.
So that's just a recommendation as you're considering this. The other is thinking about membership for committees right now. Right now, we already have a bit of a tough time staffing the existing committees. Adding another committee with sufficient staffing could be a difficulty. I'm not saying it makes it an impossibility, just something to consider. And the CEO tech, right now, I know that we, as the assemblies, as shared governance, don't have authority to see to Cornell Tech. That just isn't, and Gina can verify if I'm wrong there, but I'm fairly certain that that hasn't happened yet.
The GPSA
does. We do.
Good? Yes. Never mind that, I'm wrong.
They do.
That happened.
Let's all start it.
Because last we talked about employee assembly, and that wasn't, anyway, that's a discussion for another time then.
I'd like to make a call to the order of the day, noting the time.
I'd like
to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have 3 minutes until our guests, arrive. But we have two more speakers on the list. So, Ellis.
Having been in this a long time, number one, this committee is only advisory. It has absolutely no power to do anything. Number two, it depends on the, I don't want to say the desire of, on the willingness of the current provost. The president does nothing. The provost is our chief financial officer. We've had provosts who were very transparent. We've had provosts like Biddy Martin, who wasn't going to tell you what dime was spent where. If you don't have the central administration willing to give you the information, then you don't have anything to work on. It's very easy. We used to have fiscal responsibility for things in this in the UA. Fiscal responsibility. And people who were there will remember, I thought that we should exercise that. We had fiscal responsibility over transportation. I say, hey, you know, let's say that parking is free. Because we had fiscal responsibility, and we lost that because we weren't willing to do anything about exercising the power that we had at the time. So I'm all in favor of having a lot of input to these things, remembering that the ability to influence budget, even the faculty can influence budget the way we would like to. So I'm more in line with what Marty had said, and that is we have a committee that could conceivably do this. We have staffing problems, as Jeremy said. I'm not sure that we need another committee that basically is just going to provide opinions, and hopefully the administration will pay some attention, and they don't have to. And Mike Kotlikoff, looking at what Mike Kotlikoff wants to do, he was my chair, he was my dean, and if he doesn't want to do it, I don't care who says what, it won't get done.
So noting that our guests are here.
Motion to table this resolution.
Okay.
I don't think we need to table it in the sense that, I mean, I think we can table it, that's fine. But I don't think tabling it is the that we'll come back to it and we'll talk about it. I would suggest that at this point, what needs to happen is two very enthusiastic people about this need to go to the provost, need to go to the Office of Budget and Planning,
which exists here at Cornell, and especially talk to Mary Lynn Cummings, and talk very sincerely about the need for what you are interested in having doing, and ask her if we can, and I'll bring up the history of everything in the past, and ask her if there's a way that we can put forward a resolution. I would suggest you do that, because she's on the campus planning committee too, and she knows it's a UA committee, and she knows something of the history, although she wasn't here when this happened. If we can put forward some kind of resolution which will show that we are eager to be more engaged in budget, okay. Then, and what suggestions might she have?
There has been a motion to table the resolution.
I understand.
Right, and so the motion was seconded, and we're required to vote on it because it's a non-debatable motion. So if
I'm not debating anything. I'm making a suggestion that I'm happy to pass this, but I think tabling it is not saying we're going to come back to it in the same way. And I would suggest
that's fair.
I disagree. I've been on the speaking list while you're speaking for several times. So I disagree with you. I'd like to see us bring it up soon at the meeting.
Okay.
I'm a strong supporter.
We have to vote on whether or not to table it. If you want to table it, vote yes. If you don't want to table it, vote no, and you can kill it or send it back to a committee or whatever you want. So we have to vote on tabling it, though. If you are in favor of tabling the resolution and discussing it at a future meeting, please raise your hand or placard. If you're opposed to tabling it, if you'd like to abstain. Okay, the resolution is tabled. I think you should connect with Joe after the meeting to talk about next steps.
Motion to suspend the agenda and move into the guests.
All right, let's do it. Thank you so much for being here. You have the floor.
Great.
Or the table, I guess.
Or one table.
Feel free to pull it. And please introduce yourselves whenever you feel ready. Thanks so much for your time and being here today.
Thank you for having us. My name is Christine Masters, and I'm the president of the Panhellenic Council.
I'm Paul Russell. I'm the president of the Interfraternity Council.
I'm Abraham Mariah. I'm president of the MDLC.
Kara Miller, the director of Sorority Fraternity Life.
So we don't have too much prepared. I know you guys have some questions for us. It's about judicial stuff, so you guys can just ask away, and we'll sort of figure out where to go from there.
Yeah. Okay. So first on the speakers list is Matt.
Absolutely. So first off, thank you so much for coming. Good to see you again, Paul. I guess just in general, this is a question and a comment to the assembly. The general comment is the Greek judicial system operates alongside the campus code of conduct insofar as the Greek system is a university. Recognize that university affiliated, and therefore the actual, whereas members are under the code, the actual organizations are handled separately. There is talk, and there has been talk for a while about should they come back under the code, yes or no. That involves a lot of liability concerns, and that would be, in essence, we've made some changes to the code, actually one concerning the length of organizational suspension, increasing that. We talked about in the fall, so we did that. But I guess my question is, what do you think if you had to pick one thing you could improve in your system, what would you do? And then is there anything that you think we could do to help with that or otherwise generally help you in general?
Is particularly related to judicial processes?
Take it as widely as you think is best.
on the topic of the judicial process, one thing that I noticed, so I was president of my chapter last year, this year I'm president of Panhellenic, and one thing that I've noticed over the past year is that often when the Greek Life Office handles the judicial cases, the threshold for evidence is at 51%, whereas for the OJA is at 75%. And I think that even though fraternities and sororities are held to a stricter standard, that also means that probationary statuses are given out more frequently and therefore may resonate less with fraternities and sororities. That at least has been my experience with it. Which is why I wouldn't be opposed personally to having kind of a higher threshold. And that doesn't come from a place of, that doesn't come from a place of like, we should hold Greeks to less strict standards. That comes from a place of really only giving out probationary status when we have like 75 or like the threshold is at 75%, if that makes sense.
75% of what?
It's clear. It's already said it's between preponderance of evidence and clear and convincing.
Yes.
So preponderance is 51, which is what it sounds like they use.
Oh,
the code is clear and convincing.
Right, right, right. Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. Joe?
Pass on me. I'm still thinking my question better.
Okay, I'll put you at the bottom.
Thanks.
Richard?
One of the issues that's come up as we've discussed revising the campus code is the way in which the campus code applies to both the organizations, fraternities, sororities, but individuals in those. And one of the problems that's come up is discerning when the institution, the fraternity or the sorority, is responsible through its officers or whatever, for whatever act occurs, and when it is the individuals as students and members of the Cornell community that are separately responsible. Not so the one that came up in the faculty senate meeting, last faculty senate meeting, was this thing, the pig roast. So the pig roast in, does everybody know what this is?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go through it. Okay, so I'm not going to go through it. So, but the question is whether it was the fraternities was housing in a way that made it culpable for, because it wouldn't have occurred. Big Rose wouldn't have occurred if it hadn't happened within a fraternity, but it was not the officers of the fraternity, but it was the members of the fraternity that set up the competition. The question really comes down to, you know, putting fraternities and sororities outside the campus code makes it difficult to reach responsibility for individuals within. So, any suggestions?
I know currently, as it works, students in fraternities can still be brought to the JAA, as a result of their actions separately from the, sort of tri-council judicial processes. So I think much of the decision to bring, a particular case to the Greek Review Board comes from, getting evidence to say, okay, this is at least somewhat related to the chapter as a whole, or that is information that could be found if an investigation were to happen. And so I don't necessarily see that there's an issue of, confusion on who to prosecute, I guess. I mean, you might not have more insight on that because you're deciding beforehand.
There are examples where a fraternity or sorority comes before a judicial process, and in addition, individual members of that fraternity or sorority go through the judicial process. For example, in a hazing case, if we can identify individual actors who might have been perpetrating hazing, they can go for individual charges through the OJA, in addition to the fraternity or sorority going through our process. That has happened in the past, that happens currently. We've had that happen where the individual students were not found responsible, but the organization was, as recently as last year. I think sometimes there is a challenge of identifying who the individual actors are.
I would also like to challenge the idea that something like the Pig Roast, for example, wouldn't have happened if it weren't in a fraternity or even a sorority setting, because I think that misogynistic ideals exist outside of fraternities. One of the benefits of having a Greek system is that it's a way to hold members of the Cornell community and the Greek community accountable for their kind of actions. So I just wanted to express that.
Next, Richard, did you have a follow-up, follow-up? Or?
It is a follow-up. The officers for a fraternity or a sorority in organizing or The question is the line between organizing, abetting, encouraging, initiating, and tolerating. And that what we've seen, all too often, this is where this is coming from. All too often, we have seen that the activities that we think are reprehensible are coming, being in these institutions, and then the officers step aside and say, you didn't do it. And it leaves the assignment of responsibility a problem. And it's a, so one of the impetus for bringing fraternities and sororities as much as possible under the campus code is to basically fix this responsibility. It's a, yeah, that's it.
Rena, or yeah, Rena, then Joe.
So coming back to the pig roast events, I know that some sort of punishment have been decided for the individuals involved. That includes, among other things, compulsory attendance in the events in the sexual awareness, sexual assault awareness week, right? And my question is, were organizers of this event consulted on this? Because we have heard complaints that, you know, this event is supposed to be a safe space and the organizers are worried about this.
Yeah, that, so the difficulty of, you know, the sort of review board process is a lot of it happens in one room and decisions have to be made then. I know that, I mean, I've gotten contacted from people from that organization, and I think they contacted you as well. I don't know the process of changing things afterwards, but I mean, you might be able to speak on that.
Yeah, so both of the organizers of Sexual Assault Awareness Week are sorority women within our Panhellenic community who are known to us, and the point is well taken about consulting ahead of time. Things are allowed to be changed if our office approves it, so we now, after the fact, can have conversation with them, and if that is determined to be not a good idea, we can kind of rescind that. We're happy to reach out to Caitlin and Hannah, and I acknowledge that we didn't do that before.
And I do think that is a very valid concern.
Jeremy.
So I've got really two things. One, I see all. but first is, I'd like to hear from each of you. What do you see as a benefit to standardizing under the current campus code of conduct, with, of course, input from Greek Life? And what do you see as a negative side to that kind of consolidation?
Hello, Abram again. I believe benefits for typically MPLC and Greek Life generally. There's often a perception among MPLC organizations that there'll be increased scrutiny on us in particular, and it's like generally when people who are making these decisions don't necessarily understand the intricacies and complexities between MPLC Greek Life as compared to IFC and Panhell. Speaking with the JA, I believe she spoke to some kind of like more information effect finding activity that would engage the different members of the community to ensure that they have their understanding of what MPLC is. So from that perspective, I saw some means of the benefit of having that more rigorous standard of understanding what MPLC is, understanding the relationships and what different activities, what different like things might necessarily mean to an organization and to the individual as a whole. In terms of like drawbacks, I believe there's still the issue, I want to say, of, I think someone brought liability, but I guess like from the MPLC perspective, there's still issues to be seen in when we have less, I guess, agency in the way we are, in the way we're taken care of and handled. And I believe also when you brought that, we could have like some role in that thing with the JA, she brought that it'd be more or less solely the JA's office, and that we like would no longer have like a really any kind of role responsibility within it. And while I understand that Greek Life should be held to the same, if not higher, standards, nursing university community, at the same time, when different activities and the culture within it is still not fully as accepted and not put to the same, I guess not put in relation to the activities that happen, then there can be, I guess, penalties put in place and restrictions put in place that might not necessarily fit the actions that occurred.
Marty.
Yeah, I was just explaining, I was an attorney for 4 years in my undergraduate life. I'm not I'm not sorry to interrupt. This is my cred. My cred.
Wasn't everyone asked to respond to that question?
What's that?
I thought the original question was to ask each person to respond.
Okay. Do you want?
Oh, sorry.
No, it's not my fault. Do you want to?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I would say that from sort of an IFC perspective, the benefit would certainly be that there definitely is a perception that when you have an entirely separate judicial process, that process is sort of influenced by different factors. That, you know, you'll hear rumors that, oh, the alumni came in and because they have so much money, that's why this decision was made. Or, you know, because there were fraternity men in the room who were helping to make the decision, that, you know, made it become a different decision. So the benefit of having it under the OJA is that there's not that, you know, sort of paranoia that the system isn't truly being, equitable when compared to other decisions that are being made. From the drawbacks, the having someone in the room who has had experience in being in a chapter currently is beneficial, not necessarily for just understanding. I don't say that to say that, you know, we want someone who's going to be able to sort of empathize with the people who are being brought to the review board. But I think oftentimes, at least when I'm sitting in a review board hearing, there are questions about, what does this exactly mean? Or how often do chapters do this or that? And I think that sort of input is really insightful usually. I fear that there could be more confusion throughout the process if there weren't someone who were involved who had that. And that's not necessarily to say that there's no way to, you know, still work out the sort of JA system and have that input possible, but it's just something to think about.
And then I guess going at it from a panhellenic perspective, a little bit as to what I was saying before about holding chapters to a clear and convincing level of evidence would be really beneficial, because I think it would legitimize the judicial hearing process much more than it is now, at least. I also think that holding Greek organizations to the same standards that other organizations are on campus is really important for the general perception of Greek life, to show that, you know, a Greek organization will be treated the same way that an alcohol organization would or a club sports team would. So just to put it on a level playing field, I think would be really important. As for a drawback, a challenge that I would see is I'd really still want to incorporate student voices in the judicial process if it were to go to the OJA, just because the vice presidents of judicials for all three of our councils are really, really qualified student leaders, and I'd be upset to see if their voice and their opinion got removed if the judicial process were to move over to the OJA.
So real quick, one is, that's excellent, thank you. Part of I think the discussion there, what I'm hearing from across the board is a concern a bit about the makeup of the hearing boards that would be making decisions. And I entirely think that that's an addressable thing, since that is within the purview of the university assembly, is deciding how those hearing boards are constructed. The other is, just quickly, if I can, I would like to hear, outside of even the legal process, what can the UA offer to the Greek houses as in forms of support? What can we do for you?
Thank you, Brad.
Yeah. It's a loaded question.
Why don't we let the conversation continue, and I'll get back to you afterwards, because I really like to hear, because we don't get an opportunity to talk very much, and I'd really like to hear if there's anything that we can do to help help you.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Marty, I'm sorry that you got
it. It's all right.
My fault earlier.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. So what I'm wondering is this. I mean, I brought that up, you know, I'm not trying to say, yay, Rob, let's go at it. But I was saying that I was a member of fraternity, but I remember what it was like. I mean, it was in the 60s. And there, what I had was an interesting experience where the fraternities got out front in integrating the houses. That is, all the fraternities except one at this university I went to were segregated. And fraternities left the Nationals, a number of them, at the campus because of the moral responsibility they felt to speak to an issue. So I'm actually interested in not, you know, who's going to administer the penalties or who's going to patrol things, but how is it that Greek life can actually be exemplary? How is it that it can set a standard of behavior that the rest of the campus has to live up to? Why is it that it doesn't? Or let's put it another way. Why is it that we hear about it with hazing, we hear about it, which we had at this university, by the way. I was hazed by being carried to a, you know, 10 miles away and having to walk home. But anyway, that's an old thing. So they got penalized for that. In fact, we left the nation. I guess I'm saying, why is it that when we have a racial incident or a hate speech incident, that the fraternity affiliation of the people is brought up? Yes? Why is it that the pig roast is associated with a fraternity? Why is it that hazing is associated with a fraternity? So I guess what I'm saying is not, you know, you guys are evil or anything like that. I'm saying that, and I agree with you, that these things go on in society all the time. But how is it that the fraternity institution can set a higher example? Now, I know that fraternity Greek, my wife worked downtown in a social service organization. There were these great groups that would come and participate, individuals and others. And, you know, I'm in a community center. The Greek participants, you know, do things to build the community center up. Those things are wonderful things. Why isn't it at the core of Greek life, or maybe it is, that's what it's about? Why is it that we have to keep, I'm going to be done in a second. Why is it that we have to keep thinking about what's going on at these drinking parties? Why is it that people have to think that fraternities are sanctuaries where people can drink so much that they kill their little gray cells? You know, instead of having a very strict, strict not in the sense of an ascetic in any way, but, you know, I'm just presenting an example. That's my rant, but it's also a question. And I'm interested in your respective responses to that as why, you know, how can it be that, anyway, Master.
I think it's a good question. Sort of the way I sort of conceptualize, you know, what's happening in the Greek community in a lot of ways, I think when a student comes to campus, they come from their, you know, often homogenous background, from, you know, whatever biases they have, and they could either be, you know, placed in an environment where they're sort of challenged, there's a lot of people who are different from them, or they can be placed in an environment where people have the same sort of biases, the same sort of homogenous backgrounds. And, you know, when that's the case, then there's sort of no one to check people. You know, there's people are sort of brought into the groupthink sort of scenario where they just, you know, whatever they are, whatever issues are already existing just get, you know, exacerbated because that's what the community is like. And so our sort of thinking often is, how can we go into chapters that have sort of created these environments where people aren't being checked on the, you know, issues that they have, on the things that that need to be dealt with. And how can we, whether via education or programming or just, you know, causing different sort of interactions to occur, how can we sort of expand the networks of people so that they then are able to either learn about or just understand others and sort of experience a different sort of side of campus. And so some of that is by, you know, requiring programming, like I said. And so, you know, a lot of it's just, I mean, you know, these are big, broad issues, like you mentioned. And so we do have to figure out different ways. And I mean, it's hard because when the Greek community is a third of campus, it's a very large swath of people who can, you know, mess up and who have their Greek letters, you know, told when they do something wrong. But I mean.
Well, I guess I'm thinking, go ahead. Sorry.
I would say my kind of initial response to that kind of question is that it's a very large cultural question. And my impression of the Greek community now, 2 years into it, is that there is a very, very pervasive hierarchical notion of Greek life on this campus. There are good chapters, there are middle chapters, and there are bad chapters. And as a result, that lends itself to people being really proud and having a lot of chapter pride, but not having a lot of Panhellenic pride or IFC pride or MGLC pride or Greek pride. And even with that kind of like intense amount of chapter pride, a lot of times, if we're being perfectly honest, a lot of times people are only really proud to be in the good chapters, which means that you have a lot of other people embarrassed to be a part of not good chapters. So I think part of the reason why you don't necessarily see all the positive things that Greeks are doing on this campus is because a lot of people in Greek life don't really want to be associated with it. And I think that there, all three of our councils need to work on intra-council unity and in Panhellenic. It's become this like trite term called Panhellenic positivity that people poke fun at, but I think it's a very legitimate concern. And then I think we need to work on a larger tri-council sense of unity, which is easy from our level because the three of us are right here right now, but on a chapter member level is a really huge challenge.
I guess to just like hit the historical point, there were still fraternity members that barred black students from attending their parties, as well as the Upsilon levels of fraternity that actually tried to stop the Wall Street Hall takeover in 1969. So I understand you have like a very good perspective, and it was great that Irish fraternities were decided to desegregate early on, but I'm imagining also there was a very, there might have been diversity from the organization might have been and was getting inclusion. Regards to like present day and I guess the culture around it, I think it's just the MGLC organizations, there's a lot of pride individually, but like you said, there's not like a lot of like MGLC unity or like tri-council unity. But culture as a whole, I think understanding that a lot of times media generally will always put sides like bad news opposed to good news, because people like always like feed more so on that bad news than like spread it further and want to conversation around that more so. So, and this is media perspective, as in terms of like the individual organizations for promoting what the positive things that they're doing. I think a lot of times in terms of like recruitment, you will always publicize like your social events, and I think generally our organizations do publicize our philanthropy and our community service events, but at the same time, those tend to be pale in comparison to like the social events that we throw, because people will talk about the IFC or the MGLC party that they went to last weekend, but they won't talk about the service event that they see coming up next week or something like that. So most people like a student by culture of emphasizing the social aspect of like the more community building aspect was like the service aspect, the philanthropy aspect, because that's what more or less I'm guessing student body needs when they are stressed by Cornell on a regular basis. So from like
when they're what by Cornell?
When they're stressed by Cornell on a regular basis, so like academics or like organizational obligations. So while each organization does publicize all the events that they go to and all the events that they put on, at the same time, the student body will have a very positive reaction to at the parties as opposed to like the community service. So that'd be my response to.
I'll just quick follow up. It seems to me like this is a leadership issue, and I mean council issue. I think it's got to be that the council defines certain goals, and maybe it reaches all of those fraternities. We had the same kind of leveling of fraternities in the institution I went to. Some were that. In fact, the one that I joined was considered on a lower level by some of the ones that were hot stuff because it was interested in integrating. So my point in saying this is that the leadership issue is really important, that the leadership has to say, this is what we stand for as Greeks, and these are the kinds of values that we need to do, so that we don't get, you know, the equivalent of this is locker room talk, you know, this is fraternity talk, you know, so everybody can be fine doing the way this. You know, you got the picture? We don't want to use we don't want to have it be that Greek life becomes, oh, well, that's the way they do it in Greek life, you know, that's all right, it's acceptable, it's an acceptable kind of terrible antisocial behavior, you know what I get, you know? We don't want that to be the equivalent of this is locker room talk, which we got pretty early on a few months ago as being acceptable. So instead, you set a standard, and you actually say to the chapters, this is the way this is what you're learning at Cornell in a social setting. You're learning to get together as a community, bond together, learn about diversity, learn about opportunity. Anyway, Boston, sorry. Thank you.
I'm going to extend the meeting by 5 minutes.
Let's until this.
Okay, there's been a motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes. Is there any dissent to extending the meeting by, okay, you dissent to extend.
Well, the question is it says that it's 6:15.
Oh, it does?
It does.
Yeah.
My apologies, I misread that.
Okay.
Never mind that.
No, I don't think we need to extend.
Yeah, so we have one more person on the speaker's list to ask a question, Joe.
Okay, so first I'm going to touch on the, I had a great conversation yesterday with Kara. She answered all my long-winded questions, a lot of things, but a couple new things. On the topic of Sexual Assault Awareness Week, will, so like I, one of the events I'm in charge of the LGBTQ one, on a personal level and on a level of, on that discussion, I don't think members from ZBT should be in the room. I think there should be some sort of notification for the people who are putting on that event, because there are many co-sponsors, to know, hey, they might be coming to your event. Just as long as you're obviously in touch with them, I'll be in touch with them. But from my perspective, that would be a little messed up, but you know, that's me. Second thing, it's kind of going to touch on the two-thirds of this campus undergraduates that are not in Greek life and kind of the concerns that come up when I talk to them. So I'll give a short little story. You know, one day, a group of, I'm going to say three, there's like three gay guys walking past a fraternity at night as a party happens. There's five fraternity brothers, or what they thought were fraternity brothers, and they just started yelling fag at them. That's just how it happens. It's what it's like to be gay on this campus. Got to be completely honest on it. Like, I hear that term quite often at nightlife on this campus. And so the concern becomes, as an individual who just experienced that, how do I feel confident going through a judicial process, especially through the Greek Judicial Board? Who do I go to? Who can I actually reach out to? Do I even trust the system at this point? Because am I going to feel like I can accurately express my concerns? Because there is no district attorney or JA or independent authority figure that represents the community interest and a Greek life setting that are non-Greeks. And I think that's the concern. That's the concern of not being able to have that community input that allows, I think, on certain cases, the JA more authority. Because when you look to the JA, that's your district attorney. That's who represents the people, essentially. So I'm curious, Kara and I had a great conversation, community involvement within the Greek judicial process. But from your three opinions and opinions of your councils, what have you explored on that personal level of involving other community members, that two-thirds of that's not Greek?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think, you know, the discussion of adding or having someone else who's not a part of Greek life in sort of judicial hearings is, I think, a very, you know, it's something that we discussed a little bit before. I think it does have some weight to it. I think that makes a lot of sense. Also, I mean, in those rooms, it's often not, you know, it's not just individuals from one sort of sect of Greek life who are deciding, because it's, you know, often, or it's, when it's a review board decision, it's mostly administrators, and it's, you know, even though most of them usually have some sort of Greek affiliation in the past, there's people from MJLC, from PhD from ISC, but I think there would be a benefit to having, you know, other voices involved. For like before getting to that process, I mean, I think that there also are channels outside of Greek life currently, you know, whether that's through the JA for specific individuals or through bias reporting or even, you know, through reporting with the with Greek life, if that's a concern or that's a something that someone wants to do. But I mean, I think it is the case that you know, people could feel that way, that there isn't really someone to stand on their behalf, and that's something that we do need to address. So yeah, I hear that for sure.
I would just say that while someone sounds entirely bad, you'd want a Jay or someone that is like independent of all the entire Greek systems that represent the community members that are not Greek. I think also there's some benefit to having, I guess when you file a bias report, you also don't have like a name that you associate with the incident. So I think the ability to be associated with certain fraternity members, be able to reach out to a fraternity president, like even the IFC, which like a council leader as well, I think provides the members like more of an avenue to address that. And I think also going through the day and then the higher standard of evidence was being 75%, the bystanders were more likely to go towards an overall report saying, like, this is the cultural campus currently opposed to, like, being able to have any kind of direct effect. So I know that, obviously, it always seems to be very difficult to, like, get any change, like, any kind of, like, retribution or, I guess, not just a market reward, but, like, any kind of, like, resolution to, like, your issue or complaint. I think it provides more avenues for you to seek that, I guess, positive effect either on the individual or find some means of, I guess, increased, not safety, but some means of, like, increased feeling better that your complaint was heard and that your complaint is being able to affect some change from either that house, that community, or, like, that area.
Did you have something you wanted to add?
Okay,
that's great. Okay, so I don't think there's anyone else on the speakers list, so I just want to say, Christina, Paul, Abraham, and Kara, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. I know that, you know, sometimes you get a lot of flack, but I know that you guys work really hard to do right by your communities. So thanks for being here today. Okay, so technically the meeting isn't over until 6:15. So we have 9 more minutes to do the other resolution and go through all the assembly reports and liaison reports. So could we do 5 minutes for the for UAR 10 and then do the committee reports? Which is, I guess, with the agenda says anyway. So, okay. Joe, you actually have the floor for this room.
Yeah, so I'm just going to go quick what has happened so far. The 3 sponsors have a meeting with officials around this current issue. So we need to discuss the resolution right now because there is a meeting, so we're just going to go and table it.
Okay, second motion to table UA Resolution 10. The motion is seconded. If you're in favor of tabling UA Resolution 10, please raise your hand or placard. If you're opposed, if you'd like to abstain, by a vote of 10-0-2, I'm counting during the abstention because he's in the room. The resolution is tabled, so we'll now move into committee reports. Okay, so we'll do assembly reports. Okay, from the student assembly, Chris, you're the other voting member of the student assembly. I couldn't be here today, so if you want to give a quick essay report, go for it.
What happened? We have a new member on the executive board as of 2 meetings ago, I think. Our vice president of external relations. He's trying to rework the website, so we're trying to improve communication and stuff like that. We also have recently set up a net print committee looking at providing free printing opportunities for campus. A lot of peer institutions provide like free printing credit or a free printing just generally, or at least they don't charge you like for 2 sides if you print on like 2 sides, or for 2 pieces of paper if you print on 2 sides. So it's basically investigating those sorts of issues. What resolutions we passed? Oh yeah, we're also considering adding an ex officio representative for the veteran community. Even though there's only around 23 veterans on campus right now, it's difficult for them to basically connect with the undergraduate student body because of such an age and experience gap. And I think the provost also said that he wants to increase the number of veterans in the undergraduate population to like 100 individuals by 2020. So it might become more relevant.
Okay, any questions or comments for Chris?
Just real quick, on the veterans thing, being a vet myself, there is a really strong veteran community on campus. I would recommend reaching out to the Veteran Colleague Network and getting their feedback, and I'm certain support. So,
and if you have any questions about that, I'm Frank, part of the VCNG as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Other questions or comments for Chris? No. Okay. Next is Rena, GPSA.
Yes, we had a meeting yesterday, and we had some progress report from Maplewood, and we had a productive discussion around restructuring the GPSA to increase representation and engagement of members. And also we had some discussion on, about internal processes and procedures.
Good. Any questions or comments for Rena? No? Okay. Employee Assembly, Craig?
Okay, thank you. First of all, I want to apologize that I haven't had an opportunity to meet many of you one-on-one yet, but I'm very happy to be here as part of the University Assembly and helping to represent the Employee Assembly. As far as an update, right now, we with the transition in leadership, as well as a couple other issues, we're focused for the remainder of the academic year on cleaning up some of our old business and resolutions that have not been addressed that need to get tied up. And additionally, providing an update to the employees across campus on where past resolutions currently stand in implementation and taking and providing an update, because I think there are a lot of employees across campus that don't really know what's been happening and what's not been happening and so forth. And so just providing that update. And then lastly, pushing for campus engagement from the Employee Assembly to our constituents and ensuring that all of the folks that work on this campus to support the academic efforts and students that they recognize that there is an assembly here for them. So that's all. Thank you.
Yep. Any questions or comments for Craig? No? Okay. Then we'll move on to Faculty Senate. I understand that Dean Van Loan, Charlie is not here. Richard or Marty, do you have any from the Faculty Senate?
Let's see.
You can have every call.
He wants to see.
Oh, yeah. 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 You want to stop?
Yeah. Chris is back.
A couple of the key things that the Faculty Senate is doing right now. One is setting up an ad hoc committee. It's actually related to the to the Employee Assembly, exploring whether or not non-faculty academics, so these would be lecturers, senior lecturers, research associates, those kinds of groups, feel that the Employee Assembly adequately represents and captures their interests at the university. Same thing for postdoctoral researchers, which are, again, currently represented through the Employee Assembly. So at this point, it's just standing up a committee that would have some of these people on it to explore how well they feel like they're represented and whether that is the best place for their representation or not. No decisions have been made. It's just something to be considered.
It's great. Questions or comments for Chris? Kevin?
No, I'm reading. I'm just reading, man.
Okay.
I'm not saying nothing.
Okay, no problem. Any other questions or comments for Chris? No? Okay, then we have a little bit of time left. That clock is fast. So we'll move to committee reports.
Are you going to be able to push the liaison?
Yeah.
We'll make it.
Okay.
We'll make it.
I need that liaison report.
You'll get it. Yes, we'll do it. We'll do it. Okay, so report from the executive committee. I'll give this. So obviously, Anna resigned her position. So that's something that happened on the executive committee. Another thing is we didn't get a chance at the last meeting. A couple weeks ago, the UA executive committee unanimously voted to remove one of the members from the Codes and Judicial Committee because a pattern of behavior disrupted the sound operation of the committee. We're happy to discuss this more in depth with individual members, but due to the intimacy of the situation involved and to protect the and respect the privacy of all involved parties, including the affected individuals, we've decided not to kind of share specifically what happened, but you can also contact the Office of the Assemblies if you kind of want to see the record of some of our email exchanges, which are all public. So if you have any questions or comments about that, feel free to reach out to me or Jeremy or Bob or Elena after we might want to talk with her. Yeah. So Yeah, thanks for that. That's all I have. Matt?
Do you have questions?
Yeah, or questions about that? No? Okay.
Thank you. So CDC, I think we're pretty much at the end of the meeting, but give 1 minute. So CDC's met, oh gosh, a number of times. I think I gave a 1 minute report a few meetings ago. We've met a number of times. We looked at UAR R11 at our last meeting. We're currently working with addressing the idea of free speech, hate speech, and how does that fit in the campus code of conduct. That group met last Friday. It is meeting tomorrow. They're getting operational. We're very fortunate we finally got some staffing on that, so they're making positive forward progress. Members of the CDC are very well appraised of that because they're being copied in all the emails. The CDC in general is looking at, we've been discussing the code amendments that we passed in the fall, the president sent back, how to adapt them, how to, in essence, fix some of the concerns, and how we want to move forward with those. And we are also looking at a host of other issues, but in the interest of time, I'll be happy to discuss those one-on-one or with more of a detail on a question.
Okay, since we're like basically out of time, we're just going to run through this.
Yeah.
CWC.
We didn't meet last week, but update on the tobacco referendum. I believe the date that Gina and I said was going to be the best is the week right after the employee assembly elections, which I believe is in April, just so that everyone knows about that. Especially for the employee assembly and the faculty senate, there's been a lot of framing around how this is only a students-based issue. I really want to literally say it's not. Please, as the employee assembly and faculty senate, tell everyone that you will vote in this and your voice is going to be weighed just as equally. We're currently right now consulting of how best we should interpret the results as valid, mainly because we don't want there to be a massive, if only undergraduates vote, will that be considered a binding referendum on our campus? We're currently trying to create some sort of, kind of method that we can interpret it to the best of our ability to really make sure that everyone has that same weight. And if your members have any questions, feel free to give them my email. I know the employees on the CWC are super interested in it. Ask them. They're going to learn so much more about it. They're getting so much more intricate, so much more learned about it. But please, we're going to be setting up, first, there's going to be an informational email that will be sent that will show the information of how people can voice their concerns effectively, going to give people channels like writing letters to the editor. It will set the date of the forum with Cornell Health. So people can talk with professionals there, especially from the community health side, so that you can kind of create that dialogue. That's going to be created with the consultation of employees specifically, so it fits into the schedules of employees and faculty the best way possible, just because it's more rigid, I know. So we're really going to try making a huge push to make sure everyone is included in this.
Motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes. We're going to keep running through these.
Second. All right, there's been a motion to extend by 5 minutes. There's been a second. Is there dissent to extending the meeting by 5 minutes? Seeing no dissent, the meeting's extended by 5 minutes. Let's try to keep this really, really brief. And if you want to elaborate, just send an email to the members listserv, today or tomorrow. Anytime. Next is Campus Infrastructure Committee.
Yeah, so I'm moving the meeting time to alternate with UA because most people can't make the original Wednesday time, so it's going to be 4:30, same time as this. We have a lot of projects, but we're understaffed, so I'm reaching out to various environmental organizations on campus and getting members interested. I'm meeting with the director of the Women's Resource Center on Friday to look into expanding free access to free feminine hygiene products across campus, and also working on a resolution with Ian on expanding access to gender neutral bathrooms.
Okay, next we have Rena from the Policy Advisory Committee.
The group met yesterday. I was not able to make it to the meeting, but the policy under review was policy 3.17 on accepting credit cards to conduct university business. I have the proposed changes with me. If one is interested, send me an email and I can share it with you.
Could you just send it to the members listserv, actually?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you. Transportation Task Force, Kevin.
Yeah, hallelujah. One, I'm disappointed in the university assembly for not filling the Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board. Right now, it's supposed to be a 12-panel board. Employee assembly, we fulfilled our obligation, and one undergraduate has out of the 12. We need to be able to do this. We're already in April going to hear three appeals from the university for tickets, stuff like that. So far, there's been 18 appeals since it dissolved, and every one of those appeals have been denied for the employees, faculties, and students, along with adding kind of like interest on these appeals. And we really need to be able to do that. It's for faculty, for employee, two undergraduate, and we have two graduate positions. And these need to be filled, or else you're not going to have a board. So we really need to get these filled, trained, because we're already starting to hear the appeals process. And right now, it's fallen on the employee assembly, and it's a university assembly board. So,
Jeremy.
So just quick to add to that, those of you on exec committees for your groups have received multiple times now emails about this. So anything you can do to provide us with some folks for the transportation hearing board, it really has come to a point of real need, because they've been just barely moved forward with the employees we have now.
Yeah, I think that at this point, it's like so late in the year, to be honest, I actually think like the bylaws give us the ability to like let you just appoint people if they won't fill them. So if you know people, just appoint them.
The exec committees are going to get appointed at first.
Yeah, no, seriously, just do it. Like, just appoint people, because we need it.
Find them or get appointed.
And then we'll let people know that we've appointed people. And then if they want to send representatives, they're welcome to. I think we should shoot first and ask questions later. Does that help?
Oh my God.
Okay, good.
It's beautiful.
So then let's do the
contact me if you have
any Catherine's not here. Joe, anything from the Student Health Benefits Advisory Committee?
There's a meeting tomorrow from 4:45 to 6:30. That's it.
Good enough. Marty, Campus Planning Committee.
Yeah, it's a very short thing. There was a meeting on the 13th. A lot of good things were being discussed, like, for example, that there are close to 10 projects on the campus that are underway. Sometime I can tell you about them, but there's not enough time to do so. But it's useful for you to think about them, because each of them has implications for the way you, for at least some of you, for the way you, you know, move around the campus. But the one that comes to mind immediately is that there is a transportation study underway. And from my point of view, and I made this point at the Campus Planning Committee meeting, it's a study that's very limited. It's how many cars are driving around campus, period. Not where the cars are going, who's in them, and so forth. And the point of that, my saying that that seems to be rather limited, is that if you want to do something about reducing traffic on campus, it would be useful to know who it is that's driving around. And I happen to know, because I'm on a transportation advisory committee down in the city, there's a lot of transportation discussion going on there, and it would be very useful if there was integration between what Cornell's transportation department is doing and what the city is doing, not the city, the county, because there's a lot of action on in the county and thinking about these things, all the way from way to go, ride share, everything else through to increasing the busing situation. So thank you.
I can respond to that.
Okay, really
good. With the transportation task force, I think there's 15 of us along with transportation services, and we are putting out a very overranging survey that is going to be coming out, and it is including the city and everything. Transportation services is hiring a consultant for everything like that, and it includes bicycling and alternate routes, and it's also looking at other counties being able to come in through there. So I don't exactly remember, you know, when the questionnaire is going to go out, but it's a pretty big survey that transportation services is hiring consultants.
Kevin, I'd be happy to talk with you about this sometime. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, great. And then just one more final thing. I think that the exec committee, we're going to talk with the office and see about getting like a really comprehensive dinner.
Good.
Yeah, that was the last time.
Meeting was so agitated.
We have the money.
Can we go to Banffy's? Let's go to Banffy's.
Yes.
Let's go to Banffy's. Let's have a meeting at Banffy's.
Just real quick, those transportation hearing board members do not have to be members of the assemblies.
They literally, those that you don't have.
They can be just randos.
I don't think they've been listed on our website. But I'm just saying, we have these members. Okay.